This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It is so true. Again, we actually get to react in the immediacy of the games wrapping up. We now know the Eastern Conference playoff matchups in the NBA. And we're getting closer to the Western Conference picture being complete, but they still have these games so that we'll decide who plays in the 8-9 series. And then that winner will move on to battle the Lakers. So joy. And so we don't quite know the West yet, but we do know in the East that we've got Milwaukee versus Orlando. We've got the defending champion Toronto Raptors against the Brooklyn Nets. The 3-6 series is the Boston Celtics, the Philadelphia 76ers. And then you have Miami and Indiana against one another in the 4-5 series. They will get underway on Monday. An hour from now, Sean Grandy will join us from Boston. He's the play-by-play voice of the Celtics radio network. And they still do have a couple more games. Not the Celtics, they have one more. But they still have a couple more seeding games inside the NBA bubble in Orlando. It'll be so cool at some point to stop talking about a bubble. But for now, the bubble is working appropriately and as it needs to. So I'll keep talking about it. They still have games coming up on both Thursday and Friday, and then they'll take the weekend off and everybody will reset and they will start the actual postseason. I'm not sure when they're going to do the 8-9 games, if those will start on Monday or if they'll play them over the weekend. We'll see. Certainly the teams that have to play in the 8-9 game, it could be one, it could be two or three, they will be at a decided disadvantage to then have to turn around and jump right into a playoff series against the Lakers, but that's what happens.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. No, you're not. That's what happens when you end up at the bottom of the barrel. And so we'll see what they schedule for the weekend, but the actual playoffs are set to begin on Monday. And so Sean Grandy, who's got an early game coming up on Thursday, he is in Boston. The Celtics are in Orlando, but they will host their final seeding game. I say host because they're the home team, against the Wizards. And so that is a noon Eastern time tip. And so he'll be up early, and he is going to join us to talk about the Eastern Conference playoff picture. And the Celtics, also Brad Stevens getting a contract extension from the Celtics. So business also happens in the bubble that just took place on Wednesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. You know what I just discovered? And then we'll get back to some of your answers about weird and wacky atmospheres with no sports. Chris, guess what? I was reading a little more closely the fine print. The number of positive tests in the NFL, the number that they're keeping track of to determine how many are actually testing positive, it includes the false positives. Isn't that weird? I swear to you, this is from Dr. Sills. Okay, so I'll read you this little section. He says the positive tests include persistent cases. That's what they call them, which are infections that are not going away right away. So there's not a negative, then a positive, then two more negatives. These are actually guys who have tested positive more than once. So the virus is persistent for however long, 3 days, a week, 3 weeks, whatever it is. But he says that the number of cases also includes false positives, and they call those unconfirmed, which is odd, right? Because if you're allowing, let's say, Matthew Stafford back inside the Detroit Lions facilities, that means that you now believe he's negative, and yet his number is included in the positives. Well, that's odd.
We always play this drop.
Men lie, women lie, but the numbers don't.
But I think in this case, we might have to take that into question.
Yeah, we might. Seriously, this is coming directly from the NFL's chief medical officer. He says the positive tests include the persistent cases. So guys who are testing positive more than once, who are away from the team, sequestered on the COVID-19 reserve list. But it also includes unconfirmed cases, otherwise known as false positives.
For all the procedures and as meticulous as they're being, they couldn't just create a separate category? It doesn't seem very difficult. No. I don't know.
So in other words, when the NFL tells you that the overall positive test rate is below 0.5%, so it's actually 0.46%, that includes guys like Matthew Stafford. It includes guys like Gardner Minshew. He also was a false positive. What? That's not right. So these numbers are inflated. I am not going to bring politics into this.
If you can inflate that minuscule of
number. It's very small. So 109,075 tests have been administered through Tuesday by the NFL. That's players, it's team and league personnel, it's coaches, it's everybody. It's your camera crews, it's anybody who's allowed inside the facilities. Your maintenance workers, all of those people, the people who are cleaning, anybody who's around the NFL and is part of they're not travel parties yet, but is part of the procedure, they are tested. And at this point, the positive rate is 0.46%, but that includes false positives. Why? I don't understand. Why would you not just boot those? That's your margin for error, I guess. That's crazy, right? So here's why I started looking for it, because I wrote a CBS Sports Minute, which I have to record at our next break, and I made a joke about how presumably the false positives or the positive testing rate does not include the false test of Matthew Stafford. Well, apparently it does. Then I thought maybe I should look, and I went back to the article and was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. So yeah, Matthew Stafford's among the 0.46%, even though he's not positive for the virus. I think the NFL's got to, maybe they're just worried about, I don't know, about, they'd rather err on the side of caution. So they'd rather give you a number that includes the false positives, even if it's inflated.
Roger Goodell, do me a favor. Just calm down a little bit there, bud. I know we're all trying to play. Everyone,
just call him Bud.
Everyone wants football, myself included, you included, but we don't need to go to these extreme measures just to prove a point, sir.
You just called him Bud.
Well, after what I saw on the draft, he will forever be my Bud.
Oh, my gosh. You just want to drink beer with Roger Goodell.
So?
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on Facebook, also on Twitter. A-Law Radio, what's the strangest sport that you've seen or you've heard in which you can really tell the fans are not there or they're fake? Either one. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Doug Peterson, Eagles head coach, back with the team after recovering from his bout with coronavirus.
I obviously didn't want to miss any time if I didn't have to, but I stayed. I stayed engaged virtually with the team. I was able to watch the practices, and stay up on everything that we did, and still run the team from my home. The new additions to the team, the free agents, the draft picks, the undrafted guys. Those are the guys that we got to have, our answers on as coaches. So, as we continue throughout the process, and we begin to put pads on next week. Those are some of the answers that we're going to get, leading up to that first regular season week.
Coach Peterson was asymptomatic, so thankfully he did not have any type of sickness that he knew of, but he did test positive for the virus. We know that Anthony Lynn, Coach Lynn, had the virus in the spring and had minor body aches and, what did he say, minor body aches and some other assorted muscle pain, but it wasn't bad. He said he didn't even realize, he just thought it was something else and didn't even realize those could be symptoms until he was watching a golf tournament and the announcers mentioned that a golfer was having the same symptoms as he was. So he went and got tested and he found out he was positive. And so he was away at that time. Nobody was together and he has recovered and he says he feels fine, but that's three of the 32 NFL head coaches. And not all happening now. Sean Payton was early in the spring. He was the first one. Anthony Lynn was long before they got into the facilities. And Doug Peterson, the only one who's tested positive since they started training camp. But still, I mean, that number, they are not including Lynn and Payton because they didn't test positive now. But if you think about it, three of 32 head coaches. And then I still am blown away by the fact that two of the NFL starting quarterbacks, it's such a small sample size, and yet two of them had false positives. What are the odds? Never tell me the odds. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So we'll do a little QB news as we head through the show. And it's kind of fun. I mean, I said this on last night's show, but it's kind of fun to hear them talk about just football. So to hear Adam Gase and Le'Veon Bell go back and forth and actually talk about the usage for the running back this year. I'm not sure if you caught that on Wednesday, but with the Jets, where the hopes have diminished some for this upcoming season, I believe there was more positivity when the Patriots lost Tom Brady and it felt like the division was wide open. Clearly the Bills are the team that's poised to step into that space. But with the loss of two really strong defensive players, and I think just in general, feeling like this offseason has been more about throwing darts at the Jets and what's gone wrong as opposed to what's gone right. Now, we could see some big surprises. You know, Sam Darnold didn't get to play all of last year. He seems locked in and really serious. And if Le'Veon Bell can come back in a big way after what has essentially been 2 years out of his form, right? So that year that he took off away from the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he thought he was going to come back and told people he was going to come back and then didn't come back. And now Adam Gase is admitting that he didn't use Le'Veon Bell the right way last year. So for 2 years now, we've not seen the Le'Veon Bell that was the workhorse, the bell cow, so to speak, for the Steelers.
You got to make sure that you're using him the right way and making sure that we're getting him to 16 plus games and not grinding him out. Like last year, I feel like I did a bad job at the beginning of the season. I was really trying to get him going. And at the same time, teams kind of knew what we were doing and they were loading up the box and he was taking some shots. And I mean, I'm sure that wore on him as the season went on. I just have to do a good job of making sure he's getting his touches, but at the same time that we're putting him in the best position possible to give us 16-plus games.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder when your starting quarterback is out because of mono, and you've used multiple starting QBs, and so your best bet is to try to use what has been a versatile running back. You know what's crazy is Le'Veon Bell's only 28 years old, and he essentially took off a full year and says he's in the best shape of his life. He actually has dropped a bunch of weight and is down between 210 and 215. This is according to Bell. He did a really extensive conference call himself on Wednesday, and he believes this is going to be a career year. And he also dropped complacency as a way to describe his 2019. Don't know why. He said, I think I got kind of complacent in my head. I had success for 6 years in the NFL, and I wasn't working as hard. I wasn't as driven. So in the offseason, he said that he really stepped up his training, and now he believes he was humbled and has something to work for. He's no longer the best running back in the NFL, and he said, I was hearing that for 6 years, and it just became part of me. And I realized I lost my edge. And so that certainly should help the Jets if they can come back and use him the right way, as Gase talks about, and if they can find some balance, if the O-line is playing well, too. And actually, Bell addressed that, which I thought was interesting. He said, all of these last few months, people are pointing the fingers at the O-line. People are blaming Coach Gase for the usage. But, and I want to read you this quote from Le'Veon Bell. Maybe we can find the audio. He said, I had to look at myself and ask, was I really the best I could be? I know I wasn't. I wasn't even close. This year is going to be a lot different in that aspect. Talk about accountability. Talk about humility. He could have allowed everybody else to take the blame. But he said, I realized I lost my edge. I was complacent. He only averaged 3.2 yards per carry. And that was the worst ever for a Jets running back. The worst in franchise history. How about that, nerd alert? No starting running back in Jets history had ever averaged fewer yards per carry than the great Le'Veon Bell in 2019.
Take that for data.
A career low 789 yards. And I don't have to tell you, the Jets were dead last in the NFL in total offense. You can't get any lower than the Jets. They were 32nd out of 32. But I respect Le'Veon Bell for this. It would be easy for him to allow the O-line to be blamed or Coach Gase. And let's be honest, Coach Gase didn't use him the right way, A. And at times, we're not even sure Coach Gase wanted Le'Veon Bell in the offense. At times, I wondered if it was intentional. He had to use him because ownership gave Bell the big contract, not as big as he wanted, but gave him the big contract, and Gase used him because he had to, not because he felt like he was a viable piece of what they could do offensively. And yet Bell is saying, I wasn't even close. I know I wasn't the best I could be. I'll just be honest. There's a lot of things that Le'Veon Bell has done and said over the last couple of years that have made me not respect what he's brought to the table and who he is as an athlete. I don't know him personally, so it's not a personal thing. But I didn't like how he handled his business with the Steelers. Neither did his teammates, actually. And I believed he gambled on himself and lost. But if he comes back in 2020 and he puts his money where his mouth is, I respect this talk. I respect this introspection. I respect this accountability. And that's the kind of drive and motivation that we'd seen from him in the past when he was still hungry and working hard for a contract and working hard to be the best in the league. At 28, he can obviously still be a difference maker, especially when he's had a full year off away from football, going back to 18. So I'm intrigued to see what Le'Veon Bell looks like when he runs, because he's dropped some weight. Obviously still a powerful guy and versatile. And how much can he help the Jets restore that offense when used the right way? You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We haven't seen football yet, but will football be the oddest of the sports to return without fans? There may be fans in some stadiums, but for the most part, I think it's going to be a lot like what we've seen around the rest of the sports landscape, which is no fans.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Another 2-2. Swing and a miss. Got him on the curveball downstairs. And Kelly gets his man. Astros dugout has something to say to Kelly as he walks back to the Dodger dugout. Kelly turning his head to return fire. As Correa also has something to say to Joe Kelly, and now both dugouts empty as the umpires are trying to keep everyone socially distant.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It was more of a benches clearing conversation, but you remember this was the first meeting between the Dodgers and the Astros, and it was Joe Kelly who took it upon himself, presumably, unless you believe that these errant pitches were accidents. But he first threw behind the head of Alex Bregman and then threw a couple of curveballs that got away from him. That is a possibility. But around Carlos Correa. Correa took exception. And then once Joe Kelly got him out, so he struck him out, Kelly channeled his inner 10-year-old and he walked off the field mocking Correa with pouty faces and sticking out his mush and then yapping at him. And so then you had both benches clearing. And as you hear on the Astros radio network, there wasn't a whole lot of distance among them. Joe Kelly initially received an 8-game suspension. And yes, there was much mocking that ensued. Why? Because the Astros themselves were not suspended or punished in any way for what happened in 2017 with the sign stealing and the trash cans and the defiance of the rules, of course. And so the Dodgers were the victims of that in the 17 World Series. Astros were not punished, but Joe Kelly was. And so you had a bit of an uproar around baseball, not just players, but analysts and broadcasters, and looking at the irony of all of that. And we know Joe Kelly has been pitching for the Dodgers still because he was waiting for his appeal to be heard and to be ruled on. And his suspension has been reduced by three games to five games. So manager Dave Roberts, he went ahead and he served his one-game suspension and took that day to appear on CBS Sports Radio with Jim Rome. Dusty Baker, he was fined, not suspended. Joe Kelly got the bulk of it, and he is now suspended 5 days. He's actually on the injured list because of some shoulder inflammation, but he has to serve his suspension when he gets back to baseball. I don't know if you know this, but it's a former pitcher now, Chris Young, who is the senior VP of baseball operations. And this is his first ruling. So very first time that he's had to rule on a suspension since he took the job over from Joe Torre. So for a while, it was Joe who was making all these rulings, and we would hear from him about various appeals and suspensions and all that jazz. But now it's Chris Young, who's not that. I feel like he hasn't been retired that long.
He's also like 6'9" or something. Yeah,
he is. He's lanky, to be sure. So Joe Kelly gets what he wants, sort of. I mean, he's already on the injured list, so he's not pitching at this present time. But he's been with the team, at least. And now he'll serve 5 games as opposed to the 8. So in my opinion, this is a bit of a concession. I think if you are a former pitcher like Chris Young and you're recently engaged with the game, not to mention you can kind of put yourself in the seat or in the perspective, you can put yourself in that position where the Dodgers are, which is, hey, this sucks. This is not fair. And then, of course, Joe Kelly is wild as it is. So maybe he did convince Chris that not all the pitches were thrown intentionally. It's an interesting dynamic to go from Joe Torre, who's more of old school. Now, he was known as a player's manager, and the players loved him, to be sure. But a guy who represents a different generation in baseball, but to now have Chris Young as the one that you're appealing to. It's cool. Well, cool, just it's a different dynamic. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. What sport is most crippled by not having fans in the stands? A lot of you are pointing to baseball, which I think is interesting. Not all of you. We've had basketball. We've had hockey. We've had golf. We've had a caller for NASCAR. And so I'm going to get to some of your other answers here as well. I don't know. I need to do this. I every now and then I'll think of it and then I'll forget to do it. I haven't actually checked the ratings for how these games are doing. So the hockey on NBC Sports Network and NHL Network, primarily, you've had some on big NBC over the weekends. The NBA, of course, is on TNT and ESPN mostly, also on the NBA Network a little bit. And then they have games on ABC on the weekends sometimes too. I'm trying to think where else. MLS, I've seen on Fox, but I've also seen on ESPN. The WNBA is on ESPN. Baseball is, well, you get it on TBS. You get it on FS1. You get it on Fox. You also get it on ESPN. And each network kind of has its own approach. But on the regional networks, too, you have their music and crowd noise, and they can kind of tinker with it the way that they want. So there's a lot of different producers and directors who are deciding how much noise is too much noise when it comes to baseball and football. I mean, there's a bunch of different networks. I'm sure you saw this, or if you didn't, I'll tell you because I think it's funny. I have zero doubt that the NFL will expand its schedule to Saturdays, if at all possible. If let's just say there are no college football games on Saturdays, which I don't think is realistic. I think we'll get some. But depending on which networks they are, you've already got several networks that are volunteering to clear their schedules on Saturday so they can air NFL games. Duh. Of course they are. I'm telling you. And then once you start airing NFL games on Saturdays and they make more money because they have more viewers than your average college game, ooh, it's really hard to go backwards. Now, they have contracts, so they can't just completely defy the contracts. But if the NFL starts broadcasting on Saturdays, I'm telling you, it's going to be really popular. It's going to fill a void that many fans have. It won't be exactly the same, but we love our NFL in this country, to be sure. Coming up this weekend on CBS, the PGA Tour is back on the course with players teeing off at the oldest golf tournament in North Carolina, the Wyndham Championship. Live coverage begins Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern. That's noon Pacific on CBS. So we know what CBS will be doing this weekend when it comes to sports TV. And as I say, I'll check out some of the ratings for the various sports. I know NASCAR and golf had been up initially. And I know that the NHL had done well. I don't know that the NBA's broadcasts have been up so astronomically. And I just need to kind of check over the first few weeks now to see if we can get some averages. But according to the Chicago Sun-Times, the qualifying round of the NHL was up 39% over the regular season equivalent on NBC Sports. That's amazing. 39%. So for those of you who say you haven't returned to watching sports, there are people out there who certainly have. That's amazing. Good for hockey. Like I said, I'd heard that the hockey numbers were good. I just didn't have any specifics. You know me, I'm all about the nerdy numbers. So I'll research that for our final show of the week and kind of come back to you with some numbers so that I can give you some evidence. But I promise you there will be no false positives. I still can't get over that. The NFL is trying to figure out how to arrange its data in a way that's best presentable. And right now, their positive numbers, 0.46% is the positive test rate overall through Tuesday. It's 109,000 tests. It includes the false positives. That's just so weird. I guess, err on the side of caution if you want. All right, which is the weirdest sport, strangest atmosphere, whether you're watching or listening without fans, which one is the most jarring to you? On Twitter, After Hours CBS, on our Facebook page, thanks so much for tuning in on this now Thursday morning for many of you. It's After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're the colonel. You're going to command your troops tonight. You understand?
Have the off-season blues?
Blake Bortles delivers to his tight end.
Mariota drop, fires downfield. It's caught to the 5, to the end zone. Oh, my goodness.
How about the Hail Mary from Winston?
He's to the 5. He's in for the touchdown.
What a play by Manning.
Rodgers.
In the end zone. It is caught for the win.
It's time for QB News on After Hours.
The NFL and NFLPA continue to go back and forth on health and safety protocols. And now that we've seen some of them, some of the false positives, but also the initial testing numbers for the first few weeks, they feel like they're on the right track. And so they have extended daily testing through September 5th. Remember, September 11th is the season opener. It's supposed to be that Thursday night game between the Texans and the Chiefs. And so they've extended daily testing through September 5th. I don't know if they'll have another agreement after that to continue testing, but I know that they're confident. And as Dr. Alan Sills has indicated, they are pleasantly surprised with how well things are going to this point, even as they try to work out some of the data and also eliminate the false positives from being part of the numbers. That's so funny. Matthew Stafford doesn't actually have the virus, but he's considered a positive. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We heard from Jerry Jones a little bit earlier, his first press conference in 109 days. And it was mostly, not all, but mostly about the national anthem policy and him trying to, I would say take the input, but also check the pulse of various members of his own team, as well as different national leaders, both current and former. He wants to make sure he shows grace in the way that he sets the policy for the Cowboys in 2020. He also does intend that the Cowboys will have fans. You know what they're not talking about as much is the Dak Prescott contract and the fact that he is playing 2020 on the franchise tag. Dak himself, though, remains confident that a deal will get done.
I grew up wanting to be a Dallas Cowboy, and I am. And I've got dreams of being a Dallas Cowboy till I'm done throwing the football. So none of that's going to change just because we couldn't reach an agreement there for this season. But as I said, I'm a Cowboy right now, and that's all that matters. And that's my whole focus.
So Dak and the Cowboys couldn't agree on the number of years. Dak and his camp wanted 4. The Cowboys wanted 5. That would, of course, allow him to get another presumably fat contract if he continues to play at the level of a starting quarterback in the NFL. But it's not creating consternation, and it doesn't sound like there's animosity between the two sides. Also, Dak was defending Jerry Jones in his remarks on Wednesday. He was defending Jerry for not outlining the national anthem policy for 2020 or going into more detail. Dak said, I don't think Jerry wanted to say something wrong. And so right now what he's doing is he's trying to listen and gather information before he will come out and speak definitively. And he also said that players have had conversations about how they might protest or what it should look like when the season starts. And Dak said he didn't know if the Cowboys would do something together as a team or individually. But he said, as a football team, you want to represent one group. And how many times have we heard that? Nate Boyer, the most recent one to say on our show here, that a football locker room requires that you put aside your differences based on culture, ethnicity, economic status, your backgrounds growing up, your languages, your race, your religions, and you have to come together for a common goal. And I believe Dak Prescott has that type of a voice and that type of a leadership ability to bring people together across those borders and across those lines. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Having said that, I don't know whether or not he will be with the Cowboys for the rest of his career, but I do believe he's a good fit as a leader and a starting QB in the NFL. This is not a current starting QB, but Joe Montana speaking about a current starting quarterback in the NFL. The Hall of Famer was a guest on Good Morning Football and NFL Network, and he was giving advice to Tom Brady. I mean, why not? A little advice never hurt anyone.
It's a little different right now with the virus and how they're able to do and how he was able to communicate with this guy, with his new team, when he got there. And I think the biggest thing is just finding a way, no matter what, there will always be those guys that are even a little skeptical of, I don't know how you are of Tom, but until you prove that you can do it for them, they're always skeptical about it. The same thing happened in Kansas City. And once that happened, once you get totally accepted in there, which I don't think will take long, Tom's not the kind of guy that makes anything like that difficult.
Whew, struck up the band for that on Good Morning Football with Joe Montana. He also talked about Jimmy Garoppolo, didn't think he played that poorly in the Super Bowl, and gave him advice on how to bounce back. So you can find those comments on Twitter. It was interesting to hear what he said, though, because he also went through a late career team change, late career uniform change. And while he did surprise a lot of people with how he played in Kansas City, he certainly understands the challenge of walking into a completely different locker room, even with a legacy like his, where he never lost a Super Bowl start. All right, moving on. Dwayne Haskins, not in the same boat, not in the same category, but he is given the opportunity here in 2020 to earn that starting job with new head coach Ron Rivera. Though there is the wrinkle, and I believe this is one of the most fascinating storylines, question marks, of the upcoming season. Remember, we just talked about that 2 nights ago on the show, and we heard from many of you around the country. Alex Smith. You could call him a dark horse. You could call him the unknown. You could call him the chip. You could call him a lot of different things, the way that you referred to him. But The fact is that he will soon be cleared for football activities. His own doctors have already cleared him. Now it's a matter of the Redskins monitoring and making sure it's safe to allow him back to football. He's on the PUP list for now, but he's not going to stay there for long. He could be a powerful voice for Dwayne Haskins, of course, because he's been through so much in his own career. However, Alex Smith could very well be challenging for that job. And so this is an interesting role for Dwayne Haskins, try to protect that territory. But it's also something that he has to consider, that this could be a competition as much as it is a mentor for him.
I'm excited for Alex. I hope he gets back to a full, 100% health. Whoever's in the quarterback room I have to compete with. And, even though he's not really practicing with the offense, he's still working hard. And even if we get to run against each other in competition and drills, I'm trying to, make sure he gets me better and I get him better. And we look at Alex as somebody as a mentor in the room that can help us every day as far as getting ready for who we're playing each week and who we're getting ready for next week.
Yeah, that's the right answer. The stronger your quarterback room, the better the position. The stronger your quarterback room, the better you are as a team. I just don't know that Alex Smith is ready to relinquish this idea or to give up on this idea that he could be a starter. And Dwayne was really inconsistent. He was a rookie. Not necessarily fair to say that it was all him. He was thrown into a difficult situation in and out of the starting lineup. There was a coaching change. It went on and on. I have called them the Redskins a couple of times, haven't I? I'm sorry. The Washington, it's going to take me some time. That one may be the hardest. The Washington football team, Washington. Now he's got a coach that is not only responsible for rebuilding a team almost from the ashes, but is also in charge of completely changing the culture. So there's a lot on the plate of Ron Rivera, not to mention the name change. But it's fair to give Haskins the opportunity to try in his system. Is he mature enough? Is he ready? Or will it be a veteran? Don't forget, Kyle Allen is there too, and he has familiarity with Ron Rivera. Now, as for Dwayne, forget the Alex Smith part, the competition. He also wants to develop into a better leader in the huddle.
I think mostly it's just a mentality going in every day to handling your business on and off the field. And, I just feel you have to have a certain presence and confidence when commanding an offense, when commanding a huddle. And having learned that going into the last couple of games of the season last year, just been trying to, master that, the same edge that a Tom Brady or a Drew Brees has when he steps into a building, that he's there. And not necessarily having me named right now, but just, offense needs one. Offense needs a guy that's going to, take ownership and lead, and why not be me?
I was just about to say that. Why not me? If no one else is going to step into it, why not me? However, Alex Smith is a guy that fits in that category. He may not have the same winning track record, the same gaudy numbers. And what do we always hear about Alex Smith? He's a game manager, though there are worse things to be as a starting quarterback. But he has started in multiple places, three different franchises, as a matter of fact. And he's won jobs before, and he was an overall number one pick, and he brings that wisdom and experience. He also brings leadership. So can Haskins have the right voice and strike the right note where in the locker room, guys believe that he's the best option? Winning is the best option. Generally, that they will go with the winner. But, sometimes there's that dynamic of who do you listen to and who's the better leader, the stronger voice as well. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. This is cheating a little bit, but I wanted to sneak in some Colts and Frank Reich. He, former quarterback himself, now has a brand new quarterback in Phillip Rivers and a different approach, of course, in the midst of a pandemic and everything else. But the Colts are seemingly chugging along. I like the way that they remain steady Eddie, and I think that's a reflection on Reich.
We're not going crazy, and we're not trying to tell guys, hey, you shouldn't go out, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. We're setting guidelines. We're talking about safe practices. We're talking about being reasonable, taking reasonable precautions, and then trusting our guys to do that. While everything else can be changing, circumstances are going to be changing, what holds us together, what kind of grounds us is those underlying principles that we always talk about. So that's the continuity, that even when there is a change to schedule, we're not changing the principles. We're not changing the foundation. So we have continuity and familiarity in those core things.
And if you haven't heard the numbers at this point, less than 0.5% of more than 109,000 virus tests have come back positive. Less than 0.5%. The player positive rate is about 0.8%. But it's down. It's down more than a percentage point from their initial round of testing. And so if you're the NFL, you are jazzed up. In fact, if you ask Chris, he would say that Roger Goodell probably had a celebratory drink or two or three. How many do you think he had? Whatever. He's so sure that the commissioner was drunk during the NFL draft broadcast.
Confident as I am in my own name.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, ALaw Radio. What is the game? Maybe it's the sport. Something that you have noticed about the broadcast without fans that you feel like you just can't quite get over. Which one is the most awkward, the most ew is a good way to put it, right? Lowell on Twitter says baseball because it normally involves considerable interaction between players and fans. And then hopping over to our Facebook page, love how some of you have expressed your lack of enthusiasm when there are no fans in the stands. The cardboard cutouts are different. I actually had a neighbor of mine. He even said to me, I don't want to talk shop with you, but I feel like they should do this with the cardboard cutouts, and expressed his opinion. Anyway, which one is the weirdest or the most awkward without fans? I saw this from, where'd it go? I refreshed the page and then they disappear. Tim on Facebook says Tim on Facebook says baseball is just not the same. Tony says the same. I missed the cheering during crunch time, but there was one. Oh, here we go. Thomas, seeing a home run bounce off a picture of a dog's head is as weird as it gets. I guess that's the thing about baseball is you actually do get a fair number of shots or a fair amount of video from the stands. It's not just self-contained in the arena. Let's see. Jason says baseball. I miss doing the wave at my Oakland A's games. Oh dear. No, I don't miss that at all. let's see. Brett says hockey because no one is yelling at the refs after a call. On Facebook or on Twitter, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence right here on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.